Welcome to Coronation.com's post-game overreaction podcast of doom. This is after the Indiana game in 2019, in case somebody in the future, 50 years from now, finds this and says, my God, we thought life was pretty good in 2019. Turns out it was miserable as fuck for these people. I am joined by a number of the Coronation staff. Paul Dahlin, Evan, I never pronounce his last name right, Weeby, Zach Grunder, and Ranch Babe, Jill, from somewhere in Nebraska. Norfolk.
Osmond, I thought.
It's
not supposed to be in a secret location.
Okay, so anybody, let's start with, we'll start with Evan. He's young. Were you at the game, Evan?
Yes, I was.
How you doing?
Fucking pissed.
You have to actually speak into your phone.
I'm fucking pissed.
Why are you pissed?
Because we fucking suck.
Okay, let's go to Zach. How are you doing?
I'll repeat what Evan said on the chat, is that I'm just too sad to drink. And that's sad. Like I look at my liquor cabinet, I don't want anything. I just want to sit here and lick my wounds.
Well, I'd suggest marijuana. Paul?
Yes.
Paul, how are you doing?
I'm supposed to say what I thought about the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think it sucked. I think Frost brought along a staff that he's very loyal to, but probably isn't up to the style of play, and the level of play, in the Power Five, and certainly not in the Big Ten. I think our staff would be better if we were playing in the Big 12 still. But that's not happening. And we're getting worked pretty bad, and we need some staff changes, starting with the defensive coordinator.
Well, you went there, didn't you?
Of course I did.
Okay, Jill?
Well, the solution is always to fire someone, right? And I'm not too sad to drink. I have a beer right now. So I have a nice Thunderhead Brewing Crop Duster Mid-American IPA. I don't like IPAs. It's bitter, but it seemed appropriate after this game.
You know, somebody asked me on Twitter how many beers I'd had, and at that point in the game, literally almost in the fourth quarter, I'd had one red apple ale or whatever it is, and that was it. And I actually I've had maybe a total of three beers all day, so this is probably one of the most sober post-game reactions I've ever done. If I had to say what happened in this game is we got beat by a better team. Flat and simple, that's it.
Bullshit.
A better coached team.
I don't think that's it. Here's my opinion about where we are in Nebraska, is this is not a good football team, and it's trying somehow to figure out how to be a good football team. And the coaches are trying to figure out how to make them a good football team. But all the time, Nebraska fans are sitting there, and they expect like a 9-win team to come, like, I don't know, pull off Halloween masks and suddenly show up and go, oh, we were kidding the whole time. And that's not us. It isn't. You know, we can't come to that realization.
Well, I think one of the
players in Indiana.
Well, kind of.
Look at the recruiting rankings the last 5 years in a row. They're not even close to us.
This is Indiana's best start since 2007 before today. Today they went to 6-2. So I imagine we'll see something in their notes about this is about the best start since like 1936 or some goddamn thing.
Well, it is. I could be wrong about this, but I think that the preponderance of Indiana's players are upperclassmen, seniors, in fact. And that does matter. Particularly on the offensive line, but they had a a decent quarterback and a really good receiver, and that just torched us all day. I haven't even seen the post game stats, but I'm guessing Phil Pott or whatever his name is had probably 350 yards receiving. It seemed like, yes, they have better players, and they're arguably, I mean, they're a better team than we are. Obviously, they proved it on the field today.
Okay, that's not what I'm actually saying.
What are you saying?
I'm not saying they have better players. I'm saying they're a better team.
Well, that's true.
All right, because when we talk about this, everybody keeps going into like this guy's a, this recruit and this guy's a four-star recruit. And I look at it from a management standpoint of the fact that are all these people on a team working and doing the same thing all together. And I keep doing this in our podcast, and we keep going back to you guys. That's fine, you know. But for me, because I'm involved in, you know, I'm a consultant. I've done project management and things like that. When you do that stuff, you realize that if you have one guy that's not doing his job, it fucks up the entire team.
Well, if you're going to go there, John, then I'm going to fall back on my area, which is mathematics and in particular mathematical modeling. And when I look at this team from that standpoint, what I see is a few upfront fairly big problems that sort of butterfly effect through the entire system, and the system being the team. And that's the offensive line primarily. We don't have the players, either the talent-wise or the experience size-wise, to field a decent offensive line. And that has led to numerous injuries and lack of confidence, which contributes to poor performance in any number of ways. I think we can pin the most of the problems in the offense not on players, the skill players, but on the offensive line. And I don't know if that, I don't
today.
Think that's I don't think I don't know. I mean,
not today. It was the defense. Today was the defense.
Well, I wasn't going there yet. I mean, there are other issues, but I just looking at the offense, that our offense problems, if we had a decent off, not even a good, but just a serviceable offensive line, we would probably be 6-2 right now. Certain,
you mean like Indiana?
Yeah, we would.
Fuck it, I'm drinking.
Oh, yeah, so we've got you to feel better so much that you can turn yourself into an alcoholic. I'm glad I could be here for you.
What's happening?
Evan?
Yes.
You just want to go somewhere to drink, don't you?
Yeah, well, I'm too fucking depressed to drink, so I don't know. I'm going to go back home because I can't fucking deal with it. I don't get it. I'm at a loss for words. I don't fucking understand it.
What makes me sad is that our defensive line is just underperforming so much. And they're all seniors. They're all seniors, and I don't understand. Scott Frost made the comment earlier, maybe it was a week or 2 weeks ago, that our defensive line next year won't be as good as the one this year, and this year is terrible. So bad.
That better be fucking wrong. Like, this is the worst fucking defensive line I've seen from Nebraska since fucking Greg McMullen was on there.
Since Rome? Is that Rome guy?
Chase Rome.
You guys broke up. I didn't hear you.
You're talking about Chase Rome.
Rome, yeah.
No, they were a lot better than – This is 2017, 2007 level shit on the defense. Jim Rome was a soulless ginger sportscaster. Chase Rome was a I think an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle.
He was a defensive end, I thought.
Just fucking fire Chenander and get rid of any fucking Iowa ties on the team. Fucking
that's
Bob
the problem.
Yacco.
Oh, he found out. It's the Iowa ties.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, you gotta get out of here too.
It's always Iowa fault. hey, you know, I mean, we can talk about whether Chenander needs to stay. And I remember, I don't know whose podcast I was talking on when we first hired Frost, and he made it clear that he was going to bring his entire staff, that he wouldn't take the job unless everybody came with him. And I thought that was fine offensively, but I was really kind of worried about Chenander, because I went back and I looked at his performance, and his defenses have been solidly on the almost mediocre, you know, like in the middle of the bell curve, just slightly to the left, every year. I mean, he's nothing if not consistent. He's never had a great defense. He's never even really had a good defense. They've always just been kind of meh. But you pair that with Frost's, you know, amazing offense that he was able to produce at Oregon and Central Florida. I think it masked the fact that Chenander's defense was just average at best and wasn't prepared to ever step up and take control of a season and bring a team across the line. He's a 50% defense. And you know what? We're sitting right at 50% right now.
What do you mean by 50%?
I do remember way back when, was it Frost was hired and UCF was playing in their conference championship game and they were giving up like 30 points to...
It was 38-42 or something like that against
Memphis,
I think.
Yeah, and I'm like, I was posting in the comments of the game thread, am I allowed to complain about Frost defense now? And it's funny, it's still come back to that, but
John,
sorry,
Jill, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. Last season, we watched a team that really pulled its shit together and punched above its weight class in the second half of the season. And we're seeing a team that's devolving a little bit. And I go back to what John's saying. This is about people and management. You know, I think the Davis twins are lost. They're not here anymore. They're talented, but they are just not, they're checked out. And that's a big part of the defensive line struggles. And I hate to call people out specifically when I probably shouldn't, and I don't know X's and O's, but something's going on. And you saw today after, was it Carlos Davis got a roughing the passer penalty?
That was fucking stupid.
Yeah, and Khalil Davis was mouthing off on the sideline, and he and Frost were, like, visibly irritated with each other. And this coaching staff will show their mettle. I mean, this season is lost.
It's not lost. We can get to a bowl game.
No, we're not going to get to a bowl game, unfortunately, I don't think.
Oh, come on. Purdue and Maryland.
Yeah, both those teams are better than us. Right?
We're not fucking beating Wisconsin, and we're not fucking beating Iowa.
Yeah.
Hey. Iowa's offense can't score, so.
Oh, wait. Hold on. But John says we're better than Wisconsin. So I guess we will beat Wisconsin, so we just have to win one on the road.
Okay.
I never said we were better than Wisconsin.
Bullshit. You fucking said that during the Illinois game.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
John.
You did.
You did. Hey, can we go back for a minute?
Okay, John, we're gonna edit that part out of the podcast.
John, you asked what a 50-50 or 6-6 defense is.
What's a 50%?
And I mean, it basically is. I mean, you look at Riley. Right at the when we hired Riley, I mean, he had won, like, I don't know, like, he was like 200 and 200 or something like that. And he left here 51 and 51, I think. He was the epitome of a 6-6 coach. I really think, and on a, from a statistical standpoint for the defense, what that looks like is a defense that always gives up almost as much or more or a little bit more than what the offense scores on average. So if you start delving into the Pythagorean theorem of football, what you end up with is a projected wins of right around 6-6, something like that. And that's where his defenses sit. And they have been bailed out regularly. He's giving up the same amount of points, which is right around 35 a game, as he has his entire time he was with Frost. This is nothing new. He's just playing much, much better teams now that have much better defenses facing our offense, and we're not putting up 55. So that 20-point differential there is what's killing us. I mean, we only have to be an average defense. An average is about 22 points a game in the NCAA. If we could be average, we would be about 8-4 this year, I think. Maybe more. Maybe 9-3. That's why I think he's not cutting it. We need... I mean...
Okay, let's... You made your case. I think that's actually a good case. You know, there's probably people that will, when you said mathematical analysis or some fucking shit like that earlier, people probably went, well, I'm done with this podcast. But if they listen to the rest of it, you know, I think you made your case. That's a good job.
Well, thank you.
Zach, what are you having to drink? Zach went away. Jill, what do you
Sorry.
Think of
Boston? No, I'm here. I'm drinking.
Oh, what are you having?
Leftover Busch Light. Here's the thing.
How can it be leftover?
I'm demoing a wall right now in my house, which is really cathartic after a Husker loss. So that's why I put you on, you know, just putting a hammer through a wall.
I'm drinking my own tears.
Well, yeah, you know, like, we'll go with that.
There were good things that happened today.
What?
Like Luke
what?
McCaffrey?
Yes.
And Noah Vedrill. I mean, we didn't... Well, okay, Vedrill's fumble was the difference between...
Okay, said it. Noah Vedrill's fumble, when you look at a team, I mean, when you watch the Ohio State game and Martinez threw that first interception, you felt the entire team, or you saw the entire team's body language just go to shit. And at that point, they were done. And when Noah Vedrill fumbled, this team was clicking. Maybe not the defense, but the offense was going boom, 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 boom. And then Vedrill fumbled, and it's like all the gas, everything went out of that. The team. They're going to have to overcome that shit. And that's not about schemes, and it's not about understanding where to put players on the field. It's about getting guys into their heads and saying, you know, listen, Bobby Smith, to not name a player, if all you're going to do is say fuck it and give up and not have confidence, you're going to go sit on the bench. But the problem is you don't have a guy on the bench to replace him with. I think that's the issue that I have with everybody doing the constant, you need to fire this guy, you need to replace that guy in the field, you need to put another guy in there is – you know, I think our coaches have the guys playing that they think are their best options to put on the field right now.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, yeah, of course, they're making the best decision they think that it's possible. It is not a common problem, well documented, where leaders, CEOs, executives, coaches, whatever, will hold on out of loyalty to a subordinate executive that isn't getting the job done. And almost without fail, business, sports, whatever, the coaches or executives that don't do that, that are willing to say, man, I love you. You're my brother. We've been together for a long time. But here's $3.5 million buyout. You need to go find another job. Saban goes through defensive and offensive coordinators, I swear, every other year. It seems like, has he had two or three back-to-back seasons where both of his coordinators were the same? I mean, since he started winning national championships? I don't think he has. I think he's changed one of them at least every year. And yet, his performance stays the same. It's because, one, well, he goes out and gets the right people, but if they aren't doing what he really needs to do, he gets somebody else, or they get hired to be head coaches. Loyalty is great, but also you're not doing anyone a favor if you're keeping them on doing a job that they're kind of underperforming at. I'm not advocating tossing Chenander to the wolves. I'm saying that his schemes aren't getting the job done. And I think that that's an objective statement, that he needs to change something. And if you can't change it, then it's kind of up, it's Frost's responsibility to make the change for him then. That's the burden of leadership. That's the burden of command. That's the burden of being an executive, that you have to, part of succeeding at that is recognizing when you're at that point.
I always think it's interesting when you do an interview with somebody that people will come back to you and go, you're an asshole for asking this question. When I look at it, I think what I did was give this person an opportunity to clear themselves of the 800-pound gorilla that's been weighing around their neck. Does that make sense to you?
You mean like giving someone a chance to overcome their past mistakes?
Yeah, or something like that.
Well, that's fine. And that's good.
I'm probably, it's the same concept that you have, where it is your responsibility. It's kind of like you made that. Again, you made the case, Paul. You should do this more often, you son of a bitch. All right. Where else do we want to go with this? Evan?
Let's talk.
Sorry, I was closing the garage door. Yeah, I advocate throwing Chenander to the fucking wolves. He can suck my dick for all I care.
Someday you'll be a manager, Evan.
I'm basically a manager now, so.
Could you hire a co-defensive coordinator? Like, hire someone with Chenander and say, hey, guys,
go fucking pay someone fucking $5 million a year to come here and coach defense. I'm sick and tired of fucking shitty defense. Just pay someone.
At Florida State, didn't they hire? They hired a consultant, right? What they call a consultant?
Well, you know, that might be the case, but Bob Diaco was hired as Oklahoma's consultant. So. Right.
Yeah, and they just got housed by Kansas State today. So let's maybe that isn't working out as well as they planned.
Yeah, but they're still Oklahoma, and they're still kick-ass team.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. I mean, they gave up 48 to Kansas State today. So
just off the run.
Let's talk John, you asked what we can talk about. Let's talk about the state of the program that Eichhorst and Riley left it in, because I think that is the root cause of where we're at right now. I mean, Frost, we can talk about what Frost is doing, we can talk about the players, but fundamentally everything that made up the continuity in a football team was destroyed when those guys left. There was nothing on which to build a team. And I think that I don't think we can blame them for our performance, But we have to be honest and say, you know what? Those guys did immeasurable damage to the just to the identity and the, you know, the year over year ability of the team to regenerate itself. And it's a reality. It takes a decade or more to get to the point where the team goes from, you know, 10-1, 10-2 to 10-2 to 11-1 to 10-2 every year. And it's going to take a decade to get back to that if we can ever get back there, because every other team out there is trying to do the same thing. I feel like we squandered our goodwill, we squandered our resources, we squandered everything that was Nebraska under Riley and Eichhorst. And I pin the rose on them for where we're at right now.
What do you think of that?
Thanks, Obama.
Jill went off to get more beer.
Oh no, we're making new fence plans out here. I'm actually outside. I'm wandering around. We're like making new fence lines here because we have to redo some of our fences. So sorry, I was multitasking. What do you need from me?
Tell us what you think of the state of the program that Eichhorst and Riley bequeathed to Moose and Frost.
The state of the program, it sucks. I mean, there's really no other way to put it, and we asked somebody who's, 44 years old to fix it, and he's got a long way to go, and I think he can do it, but we're going to have to be patient. We're going to have to be like Tom Osborne patient with Frost, and I'm not saying he'll ever get to where Osborne was. Maybe he will. I think he has that capability, but he's learning a lot on this job. And as someone who does some of the same things, I mean, I'm never good at something I do the first time around. I can see what's happening. And he's, last year he got the players to buy in, and this year they're losing something. And I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes, but something is different behind the scenes. And this will be a big moment for our young head coach. And I think he's learning a hell of a lot right now. And it's going to suck. We're going to hate it. We're going to think this is not progressing. But I suspect it is.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right, the Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Okay, I'm going to go back
to
the management.
That's my philosophy off the soapbox and done.
I'm going to go back to the management stuff again, the stuff that has nothing to do with football. I've been an IT consultant for 30 years. I've worked for a lot of small businesses. I've watched fathers turn their businesses over to their sons. And one of the things that invariably happens is the son goes, you know what, I've always wanted to do this for years, and I'm going to go try it. And the dad goes, you can't do that. We don't do things that way. And the son, and they have this conflict. And why I'm saying that is this, is if Paul has brought up the notion that if Scott Frost is ultimately going to be successful, he probably has to fire one of his best friends. Tom Osborne really kind of never did that. And Tom Osborne is Frost's mentor. And we're doing a lot of speculating here. And I understand that. And that's what people do. And if you don't like podcasts where we speculate out of our ass, well, you know, don't fucking listen to us. But here's the thing. You're going to have to, I think when Jill says it's a big moment, it's maybe that moment comes later on when Scott Frost realized that if I really want to be successful here, I am going to have to churn coaches way more than Tom ever did.
You know,
that's going to be a big thing for him.
There's a huge difference. Oh, well, actually there's many differences between the era that Osborne was coaching in and where we are right now. And I think that the biggest one is television and how that, and what I mean by that is players across the country, by and large now in the South, don't have to go to a Michigan or a Penn State or an Alabama or a USC or a Notre Dame to be on television. They can go to North Texas State. They can go to, I don't know where. They can go to freaking Iowa State, Kansas State. They can go to these places and be on television every week. And that is, I think, the single biggest reason that it is hard to get a foothold in rebuilding. And you can't, I guess what I'm saying is that it's good. There are great morality tale lessons to learn from Coach Osborne. I mean, he is the heart and soul of the entire state of Nebraska, but what he can impart other than general wisdom principles is probably not nearly as useful as we want to think. I mean, mentoring Scott
What you're saying is now kids are looking for the fit for them. In the past, Osborne was able to recruit them and mold them into a Husker.
I think there's a lot of ways to say it, but I think the biggest thing, in the end, it all comes down to things are so different now that if you look and say, you know what, Osborne kept to this, and that was all we all looked and said, you know what, that's one of the reasons that Osborne was successful, is he kept the same staff and he always did things the same way. And I think that we learned the wrong lesson. That was not, I really think that that was not the reason that things worked well. The reason things worked out well with the same staff is because they didn't have the competition that we do now for the players they got. And we can't discount that. We really can't. The coaches that were there were at the top of their game, and we can, no one's denying that, but it wasn't the lack of turnover that made them great. It was that they were good and that they didn't have as much competition. We have 132 schools in Division I now, I think, 130. And every single one of them is on TV 10, 11, 12 times a season minimum. That is competition for every player.
For resources.
For resources in every way.
Yeah.
You know, Boyd Epley was a big deal in 1975? When did he come on board with the team? I mean, that was a big thing. Now there are high schools. I look down the road at the athletic training facility in San Antonio for my school district, and it is every bit as extensive as the weight room at Nebraska right now. And this is a shared facility among like three or four different high schools. But it's high schools. I mean, there's nothing special about Nebraska. I mean, playing-wise. I mean, for a player anyway that didn't grow up,
right?
That's not Noah Vedral. That didn't grow up there. That didn't want to be Tom Osborne, you know, or have Bob Devaney come down the chimney at Christmas. What is there to sell to recruits anymore, other than Coach Frost has to convince mom that he's the best guy, and that's how he's doing it, and he's getting good players. But there was no support. There was nothing in place for him to take over. I mean, he literally is building everything without any assistance.
That is true.
And that's why he needs time.
Yeah.
Well, I think that argument extends way beyond the initial scope of Indiana, though. Against Indiana today, we could have won with the players we had.
I don't disagree with that.
I think something happened. On that last drive, it seemed like the defense just kind of just quit. And I don't want to say that, but I didn't see them. I can't imagine watching today's game or the defense today with Jason Peter. I bet he made the paint peel off the walls watching a team dressed in black play that pathetically and with no heart and no will to overcome the deficit.
Well, everything revolves around trust, and there's no trust right now.
They don't trust
the next person to do their job. And that's going to be a hard thing to get back in this season. I mean, it's probably not coming back this season.
You know, there was some press reports that came out today that Martinez has been hurt in one way or another since last summer or before summer drill started or summer camp started. And I just wonder what other bad things that have happened are the coaches keeping under wraps? And I guess from a tactical standpoint, I understand why they wouldn't want to do that. You wouldn't if Martinez's calf has a bruise or something like that, you don't want to advertise that. Somebody's going to punch him in it and he's never going to play, you know, for the rest of the season. But at the same time, hiding things from an organizational or leadership standpoint is not usually an effective way to.
Yeah, who are they? They're not hiding it from themselves.
Well, if
yeah,
the instruction
no, they're
is,
not, yeah.
And if you,
I agree with John.
You
they're
understand
not hiding
that
it
there's
from
a difference
themselves.
Between
they know.
being hurt and being injured in football, right?
Well, yeah, I do.
Okay.
But I think
okay, hold on. Listeners, there is this concept. Your offensive and defensive lines consist of 300-pound gigantic monster men mashing into each other on every play. Everybody is always hurt. You play hurt. That's how you play football. When you do not play is when you're injured. And it's up to each individual player consulting obviously with medical staff or coaches and things like that as to whether they're hurt or injured. Continue.
Well, I just if the coaching staff has the idea that they're going to keep these injuries under wraps and not talk about them. Or let them get out. There is pressure put on the team, ultimately, to keep secrets. And in some ways, again,
most coaches do not talk about injuries.
Right. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely off base here. I agree with Jill that the psychological makeup of the team is really different than last year, and I don't know. Is it possible that Mo Washington was that destructive? I mean, we know that there was some really bad things happening with him.
Can I add in something there? So
sure.
I think part of the reason I think part of the reason our team has a different mindset is because they listen to all the preseason hype. I do. I mean, everybody was talking about how Nebraska may win the Big Ten West, and then we look like shit for fucking 6 weeks, and now we can't do anything.
Speaking of that, I think Frost is pretty hypocritical. His whole coaching philosophy is no fear of failure. Yet he then mentioned during the season, like halfway through the season, oh yeah, I had a fear of failure calling plays. And then he instills so much pressure and fear into his players to perform, right? He's like, oh, if we're going to wear these black alternates, we better play well. That's a fail of failure. That's exactly what
why.
That is.
No, I disagree with that. I think that's
they should fucking play well if they're going to wear the black shirt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to lay expectations out there. I mean, he's not saying if you guys play like crap, I'm going to cut you. He's not saying, I mean, like, not with a knife from the team. He's not saying that. He's saying black is a color that means something at Nebraska, and you guys had better respect that, or you'll never see these uniforms again. That's what he said. I don't think he said anything that was hypocritical. The fear of failure thing absolutely is hypocritical, because he did say that. And if you watch some of his play calling, it makes you wonder why in the world, you know, are we doing some of the things? It's not as bad this year as it was last year. But he was playing scared. Without a doubt.
His play calling today I thought was pretty good, and I thought it was really good. When Luke McCaffrey was in there, except for maybe a few plays.
Well, you do realize that you're asking a coach to make 100 decisions within 30 seconds of each decision, right?
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, we're not talking about Coke or Pepsi. Do I want pickles on my hand?
Well, we're a Pepsi school, so it's Pepsi or Mountain Dew.
Well, you get what I'm saying. Do I want lettuce? Do you want – what kind of bread do you want? That's why people go to Subway and they order the same fucking sandwich every time they go there for their entire lives, because they can't decide. Okay. There was inflection in that. I realize you probably thought there was going to be more in that sentence. That's why I'm not great at talking sometimes. Okay. You know what the problem is?
I bet you're going to tell us.
I am. You know what the problem is? I'm out of alcohol, you sons of bitches. So that means this podcast is coming to an end. I'm going to give each one of you the chance to get in your final thoughts, and I'll start with Zach because he's probably still breaking a wall.
You call on me?
Yes. Your final thoughts.
I was breaking a wall. You're right. I think that our offense continually shows that it's so close to being great. There are a couple plays where the guy just finished his block, just one guy finishes his block. That would have been a huge play. And then on defense, it is such a mess of one game the defensive line will show up, another game the linebackers may show up, but no one else. There's no consistency. We can't adjust. We started the third quarter slow. We got scored 15-3 this game in the third quarter. Nothing new. I mean, every game we got scored in the third quarter, and we still can't figure that out. We ran sprints on the Minnesota game, and that didn't work. So I don't know. This is just another – Scott's taking another mulligan, so he signed a 7-year contract, and he's just start again next year, I guess.
Evan.
Well, we're not going to be starting again because I do think that progress has been made. It's not like we're going to be starting all over. But, God, we are awful. Our defense cannot stop fucking anything. Can DiCaprio Boodle learn to turn his fucking head, please? I mean, dude, I don't understand why we can't get pressure on the quarterback. We can't stop anybody over the middle. And then when they throw the ball downfield, we can't even stop that.
Paul.
We are awful. We are awful this year.
And wait a minute. I already said Paul.
Well, I wasn't done. But go ahead.
I don't know if we're awful or not. At the end of this end of the season, I'll do the statistical postmortem and I'll give you the how do we compare to our identifiably awful seasons, which were 2007 and 2017. So stand by for that. We're 5 weeks away from that. I think that 3 years from now, we're going to look back on this when we're cruising to, you know, a matchup for the Big 12, you know, the Big 10 West, with either Iowa or Wisconsin, and for a right to go to the championship game every year, and we'll look back and we'll be glad that we got there, but it's going to take 3 years, I think, because as I said before, the key is an offensive line. Probably a new defensive coordinator, or a mature defensive line, a mature offensive line, and a program that produces mature offensive linemen to step in their senior year and become All-Americans like we used to have. That's how we succeeded in the past.
Jill?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Paul that it's going to take time, and in a few years, we'll feel like we've made progress, and it sucks that we've taken a step backward this year because we thought we'd take a step forward. You know, based on how the last half of last year's season went, we thought things would move forward. But what I'm seeing is just there's clearly some kind of a maturity problem on this team. And I'm sorry to say that, but they don't have the Jimmys and Joes right now. They've got some of them. I mean, clearly we've got some dudes, and there's some players that we're wasting games on right now, and they deserve better, but we'll get there. I really do think that Frost understands some of the deeper issues, and he's working to address them. So we'll get there.
Okay, that leaves it up to me, and then we're going to be done. Number one, I'm going to go get a 12-pack of beer. Number two, Rutgers won today. Rutgers actually won today. And Minnesota went to 8-0 today. And I'm sure that's like the first time since 1940 or some damn thing.
They still fucking suck.
Ohio State blew away Wisconsin. It took them a while, but they destroyed them totally. They will destroy everyone for the rest of the season. I'm not going to talk about in Nebraska anymore because you'll hear that later this week on the Five Heart podcast. And I should have an interview with somebody that I think you'll enjoy. And that's going to be it. We're going to wrap it up. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to our podcast so that we don't go out of business or something. Because God knows, I'll tell you what, I can tell from looking at our traffic and tell from looking at social media and how our comments and things like that, that people are really stopping. They're not paying attention anymore. And this is the sad thing about that is that when you look at Nebraska football, there's a lot of people depend on this, selling T-shirts, selling books, selling media stuff. This is a year that's going to turn into like people going out of business, which is kind of sad. That's about the saddest thing I can say. And that's going to be it. Take care of yourselves. And one more thing. I realize this means a lot to us as Nebraska fans. We define ourselves around Nebraska football. I've told you this before, and I'll tell you again. Don't let this cloud your day. I love y'all. I thank you for being part of my site. That goes for all you guys on the podcast, too, not just listeners. So you all have a good rest of your night, and Zach, good luck destroying your wall.
I won't, but you guys have one.
I don't need luck doing that. I need my hammer and my pry bar. That's all I got.
All right, that's it. I'm going to hang up now. You guys have a good night.
Bye, John.
See you, John.
Bye.
See you later, everybody.